This is a KUNV Studios original program.
The content of this program does not reflect the views or opinions of 91.5 Jazz and More, the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, or the Board of Regents of the Nevada System of Higher Education.
Hi, I'm Charles Stanton. I'm on the faculty of the Honors College of UNLV and the Boyd School of Law.
Hi, I'm Gabriella Tam. I'm a fourth-year accounting student.
And welcome to
Social Justice.
Social Justice, a conversation.
A conversation.
Well, good evening, everybody. We're back again. Charles Stanton along with my co-host, Gabriella Tam.
Hello.
And we have a full bag of tricks for tonight's broadcast.
Tricks.
There's never an empty pouch when we do this show.
Mm-hmm.
I guess, you know, it seems like today that you can't keep up with all the different problems that our country is enduring. We're going to start off the show, as we have mentioned previously, with the situation with Boeing.
Mm-hmm.
And United Airlines and all of that, as we know from recent news that all the major executives from Boeing have departed. There's a major governmental investigation. They're also investigating apparently United Airlines.
Mm-hmm.
It's extraordinarily disturbing. I would not say I am a relaxed flyer, but I've managed to cope with flying.
Yeah.
But you know, part of the unspoken contract, beyond the fact that you know you just buy a ticket on an airline,
mm-hmm.
is your assumption or your belief that you know the people who are you know taking you to different places. Are very scrutinous about safety.
Yeah.
And that you are under the assumption that everything that is being done is done to make sure that the crew, the passengers, everybody gets to their destination in a safe way. And I think that's open to question now.
Yeah.
I say that because of the number in the last few weeks of incidents on these planes. I mean, like very basic mechanical failures,
mm-hmm.
On the airplane. And basically, you don't get the feeling when you read what the people have to say from the hierarchy of the airlines or those people from Boeing, you don't get the feeling that they're being totally candid about actually what is going on.
Yeah.
I don't know what you're feeling.
I mean, like, I thought I heard this, but isn't, like, flying technically, I mean, it's supposed to be safer than driving, right?
Much safer.
And now it's like you're putting people in the situation, like, there are lots of people who are afraid of flying already, and now you're, like, amplifying it or, like, giving them even more of a reason to like do something that was considered or is considered like potentially more dangerous, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
It's just like, it's kind of sad how, I mean, of course, it's not only like the airplane industry, but like it makes me feel like there's just a lack of caring for people. And like, mm-hmm. we were talking about this earlier, like, it seems now like something that we have made, which is like money and something that we've put a value on, like it, this is all of like all us, like
mm-hmm.
what, like money is just something, it's just like it's man created, right? Like its value is created by us. And I don't know, it's just like we put that above people, about mm-hmm. above like lives that we should like be caring about at the end of the day. I don't know, it's just like, it's just really sad.
Yeah. Well, I think that my take on it is much like your take on it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the motivation for profit has in many industries obscured the need for the public good. so that, you know, whatever that financial bottom line is, what the stock price has to be,
mm-hmm.
how we reward our executives, how we reward the shareholders, in many cases, obscures basically the basic principles
mm-hmm.
of what the business should be. In a situation with an airline, of course, it would seem to be a given, knowing as you do and you know, studying aviation, the complexities
mm-hmm.
of something we've come to take for granted, which is flight.
Yeah.
I mean, to me, flight is a miracle that you're able to be in, you know, say like in the East Coast
mm-hmm.
and then 3 or 4 or 5 hours, you're over here, you're in San Francisco, you're mm-hmm. in Los Angeles, you're in all these places. So it's a great gift in a way.
Uh-huh.
But the obligation to keep receiving that gift is that we want to maximize every safety procedure that we can do.
Yeah.
The fact that all these executives left Boeing, which is like, along with Airbus, probably one of the two top manufacturers mm-hmm. of aviation vehicles in our world, is like profoundly disturbing, and almost like lacking any explanation to the public.
Yeah, it's like they're chickening out or something. They're just like, oh, we're being investigated. I don't want to tell you the reason why, like, our airplanes are so dangerous, or like why we're cutting corners now.
Yeah, but the thing that's also interesting is, you know, we're doing this show, and we're not. My expertise is law. Your expertise, obviously, is accounting.
Yeah,
but that you would have to come on a program like we're doing and talk about something that should be a given.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're running that kind of a business. But I think that one of the problems that you have, and this is the problem with the drug industry, it's the problem with the meat industry, the poultry industry, is you don't have the staff, you don't have the amount of people needed to really keep an eye on these industries, because in a lot of ways, even though we have the FDA and we have all these different regulatory agencies that are part of the government, they're really understaffed. So, you know, it would be like the meat industry. Like you could have people go to these different factories,
yeah,
where meat is processed, or in the case of the drug industry, go to the factories and see how they do what they do. But the amount of people that you have doing it is minuscule compared to all the things that you have to check. So in many ways, it's a matter of reliance on the people in the industry.
Yeah.
And what their priority is.
Mm-hmm.
And our society is so profit-driven now that I think a lot of these issues and a lot of these problems have not been attended to.
Mm-hmm.
The fact, it's what's frightening about the plane situation is not so much that, you know, I mean, in every industry, you could have things that have gone wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, let's say the car industry.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you had
the airbag incident.
You had the airbag incident, or, you know, and you had, like, you know, with the self-driving cars.
Yeah, those are scary.
Which were, you know, where they had issues there. But the issues here, though, I mean, the airbag is an addition to the car.
Mm-hmm.
The airbag is a safety feature.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, the thing with the cars, the self-driving cars, that's also an addition. But the thing with the planes are, this is the basic plane. It doesn't have to do with any addition or extra benefit or extra service.
It should already be in, like, included. It's like a foundation.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like the failure of the hydraulic system.
Yeah.
You know, doors coming off. I mean, just like basic things. And you say to yourself, well, who maintained these planes? Or was it that there's such a demand of people who want to fly, and the need to keep all these planes going, to handle all these. I mean, I've been on flights, and
yes, yeah,
which is kind of, I'll tell you an interesting story. When I came out here after being visiting back east in January, they had a flight that I was on where they were going to from New Jersey to Las Vegas here.
Mm-hmm.
Then they had to go, I guess, to San Francisco. And then that same plane was going to make a return flight to Newark.
Really?
So you had this enormous wearage.
Yeah.
On the planes. And not only that, though, the wearage on the crews.
Yeah.
The wearage on the pilots. And it was really kind of bizarre. I had an incident where I was on the flight, and it was a problem flight. Oh. There was a lot of weather issues and stuff, mm-hmm, like that. But at one point toward the end, the pilot came out of the cockpit where he was, and he was sort of like disparaged. He sort of like disparaged the people who were sitting there.
Oh.
And what was also interesting about it was, usually when you get off the flight, you know, my custom is basically to thank the crew.
Yeah.
And to thank the pilot. The pilots were gone. They were not there. They had left the plane already.
Dang.
So I'm saying to myself, you know,
maybe they had another flight too?
Well, this is what I'm saying, that they're overtaxing the system.
Mm-hmm.
And the danger there is, if you're doing so many flights with the same planes over a period of so many days, how actually do you maintain the plane?
Yeah.
What are the maintenance protocols for an airline?
Yeah.
And of course, what's different about it? Because it is that with a car, basically, you're the maintainer of the car.
Yeah.
You know, you buy the car. The car is yours.
That's
true.
And
you're supposed to do all the safety stuff. But in a sense, your time on the plane is almost like a lease time. You have a lease of time on the plane to get to a certain place, but your reason for getting on that plane, obviously it's to save time for you
to drive,
but it's also an implied agreement that this lease that you're going to take, the lease is going to be a safe one.
Yeah.
That you're not going to go into something where, you know, there's a chance of calamity.
Ooh,
you know, so that's how we started off our show today. I'm sure that it will go over well with the airline industry.
Oh yeah.
But in all truth though, it's not just the airline industry. It's a lot of industries.
It is a lot of industry, you know? but it's. I was just telling the professor earlier, it's interesting how there's a lot of problems involving like airplanes and like. Airplane companies, like manufacturers and like Southwest and American Airlines and all this, like, yeah, even the pilots, like, I just made the connection, like, why are they forcing all these not well-made airplanes to be sent out, but there's like a possibility of not enough pilots to fly these airplanes either?
Well, not only that, but, you know, the whole system basically works. You have the plane,
uh-huh,
and then you have the pilots, but the lack now of air traffic controllers, all these people who are overworked, and that is, I cannot imagine how challenging a job that must be.
Yeah.
Because you're at a major airport now, and whether it's San Francisco, Los Angeles, or Chicago, or New York, and you're literally responsible for all these decisions,
all these,
you know, who's going to take off, who's going to land. And read a lot about this, how all these people are overworked. They're doing hours in excess of what they should be doing. They should have a some kind of a cap. A lot of them are working overtime.
Not only that, there's so many different weather conditions,
yeah, exactly.
You know, like depending where they are, of course, if Los Angeles, you're under that sun for a while, or if you're in Chicago, you probably deal with a bunch of blizzards or all those tornadoes and stuff, you know.
And you got to be sharp.
Mm-hmm.
You got to be sharp. You see, and that's the thing that they want. And not just in the airline industry or even in the car manufacturing industry. The trend to our society is to have fewer and fewer and fewer people working because that's going to maximize their profits. Look at the drug industry.
Mm.
Look at the major pharmacies in our country, the reduction in the amount of workers. You go into the pharmacy and or call the person on call them on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about sometimes 30, 40 minutes. They've all cut back. They've cut back on the amount of stores.
Mm-hmm.
And they want the ultimate goal of these people. And you know, AI, I'm going to throw AI in here.
No, that's valid, yeah.
I'm going to throw AI in here because, you know, everybody's talking about, you know, the dangers of AI, you know, for children and, you know, that's all to the good. There should be, obviously, protections for young people and
all that sort of
stuff. But the mover behind really literally throwing it out there without really government regulation or government evaluation before it came out there has everything to do with the limitation of people. They want to cut back on all these industries. They want to remove as many white collar workers as they can remove. This is what it's about. There's no mistake about that. That's why it got approved so fast. It's the same thing with social media.
Mm-hmm.
That the regulation of social media. Okay, well, yeah, there should be regulation of social media. These companies should be, you know, very closely watching their content.
Uh-huh.
But the problem is that you got to hire people to do that.
Mm.
And they don't want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
They want to run as lean a ship as they can so that they maximize the profits for the stockholders, but also maximize the income of the executives. I was reading the other day about some of these executive packages that's mind-boggling. What these people are taking home.
Oh.
You know, and the average worker is not getting treated right. But this is what they're doing. So they're trying to move down. I mean, if you look at a lot of the food delivery services, that's basically a job killer. If the Kroger Albertsons merger goes through, there's going to be another huge drop off in jobs with the merger and closing of stores and everything. See, so the idea in business and everything is, well, you know, mergers promote efficiency and all the rest of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not really the purpose of why they're doing it. It might provide some efficiency, but it's just to get rid of people. It's just to get rid of people, you know?
It's so interesting because it's like, we don't, because, you know, there's the whole thing about illegal immigration mm-hmm. where they're like, oh, you have all these people like taking our jobs, okay, but like these jobs weren't being done by you, and then also like now they want to take it away, so no one's gonna have these jobs. Mm. I don't know, now I'm also thinking like, what do they expect us to do if we don't have jobs?
Yeah,
you know.
Well, the problem that you have about American industry or business or corporations or whatever it is I'm not saying everybody. There's some wonderful people like
there's some good people out there
like Mackenzie Bezos. Mm-hmm. You know, she's done stuff that is only worthy of praise, and yeah, all the people she's helped. But a lot of these people,
a lot of the 0.001%.
It's not just that they sort of don't care. It's that they totally don't care.
I was gonna say it's that they really don't care.
They really the needs of the average person, the rest of the stuff.
It just doesn't matter to them.
And that's why our political system is so messed up.
Uh-huh.
And why basic needs of people are not being met, because the corporations, whether it be the social media corporations or the food corporations or the drug corporations,
a lot of the corporations
basically run the country. They run the country through the executives subliminally, but they really run it through the lobbyists, who bring in a number of cases that I know of, actually wrote the legislation for the senators and the people in the House of Representatives.
What? They wrote it out.
This is it. No, that's about what it is. Yeah. I had gone to visit one of the senators.
Uh-huh.
This was a few years ago in Washington.
Ooh.
And there must have been 25 lobbyists in that office at the time. So how are the needs of an average person, middle class person, regardless of your ethnicity, sexuality, how are they going to be ever addressed? Because these people, all they're about doing is feathering their own nest. So what they do is they fund the campaigns of the senators and Congress and people in the House of Representatives.
Uh-huh.
And then when their term is up eventually, they get a job working for a lobbying company. So how does that work? How's that work? Now, just to take a divergence, I just wanted to talk a little bit about the Supreme Court hearing of the Metaphristone case.
Oh.
And, you know, the trying to ban the pill and all its insanity, which, you know, I had the opportunity to listen to a good deal of the oral argument on this.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a joke, man.
I'm anxious.
It's a joke because even the conservative justices on the court basically said that the people who were bringing the case, the plaintiffs who were bringing the case, they didn't even have standing to be in the court. They shouldn't have even been there because they did not have an established stake in this whole matter.
They were just like,
but they gave them a hearing anyway.
What the heck? So they literally were like, you're literally a joke. Like, why are you even here?
But
they did it anyways.
But they're there. They're there because you have two or three people on the Supreme Court,
uh-huh,
who will have any, as long as it's to take people's voting rights away, or it's to continue gerrymandering,
uh-huh,
or it's to limit, you know, to take away you know, abortion rights or any of these things,
mm-hmm,
they'll give them a hearing. It doesn't matter where they come from or, you know, what their actual argument is. What they should be doing, which they're not doing, instead of wasting all this time with stuff that, you know, really is legally not only indefensible, but from a technical point of view, also not hearable,
mm-hmm,
is expedite this hearing on whether the ex-president has immunity.
Exactly.
Why was that delayed?
Why was that after the abortion pill?
Well into April. well into April.
Mm-hmm. It's getting close.
When they had the situation with President Nixon, okay, who never did 1/1000th of what the other gentleman did, as to, you know, whether or not he had to provide the tapes and various uh-huh. documents, it was decided in a couple of days. When they had the situation with Al Gore and George Bush with the Florida vote,
uh-huh.
it was decided like in a day or two. This is ridiculous.
Why is this taking like months?
Because, well, I think the answer is self-evident,
but
that's why people don't believe in the institutions anymore. Because they see basically that the institution, I mean, as Justice Sotomayor said it, She said basically that more and more people are coming to believe that us, because she's on the court, it's just about politics. It has nothing to do with the law, it has nothing to do with what's right or wrong. It's a political thing. We're going to hear these cases of people who, you know, shouldn't even be before us.
Mm-hmm.
And the agenda basically, as I've said, is basically to deprive people of their vote, to deprive people of their rights and freedoms, and you know, answer to the people who put them there.
Yeah.
You see, this is the whole thing, that these people who wind up on the court, it's like a farm system. They go to these prestigious firms in Washington, D.C. They do their apprenticeship. They belong to the Federalist Society and all the rest of it. And then they go on the court. But they don't have any open mind on these issues because they've been indoctrinated into this philosophy
mm-hmm.
that has been their benefactor. So at that point, they can't turn away from it because they've already compromised themselves so many times, basically.
Yeah.
But I think it's an issue. I think there needs to be like a major like revamp of the whole thing. I mean, I think they got to look at, you know, the whole thing, whether there should be term limits on the justices.
Oh, there definitely should
be
term limits.
The whole thing. I mean, they got to almost start from scratch. Because people don't believe in it.
Do you think they would ever allow like us, like, you know, like the citizens to decide on who should be?
Oh, to vote on
yeah.
it?
Yeah. What do you think about?
Well, I think that's a possibility.
Mm-hmm.
Presuming that you had an electorate
mm-hmm.
that was knowledgeable enough to make those decisions.
Uh-huh.
I mean, just imagine right now in the climate that we're in. If you said, we're gonna make the Supreme Court, we're gonna vote for all the members of the Supreme Court right now, it would be mayhem.
Oh,
I mean, you have mayhem now. We haven't even gotten that close to the election yet.
Mm-hmm.
You're gonna talk about fake news, lies, disinformation. It would be crazy. Not only that, but the other thing would be, who would actually want to run for those positions, knowing what's out there on the internet and social media and all those things that could come back against you and get threats and all the rest of it.
Mm-hmm.
In an earlier day when people were, you know, when we were conversing with one another,
mm-hmm.
which we're not doing now, obviously, in our society,
yeah.
that might have been possible. Maybe when I don't know, President Obama was the president, mm-hmm. or maybe when President Kennedy was the president, but it's a completely different ballgame now,
mm-hmm.
you know. But we, as I like to say every time we end the show, we do not solve all of our society's programs in half an hour, but we bring these things to your attention. The most important thing is that you think about it,
yeah.
that you give it some thought. And reflect on a lot of things that hopefully we would all come at a certain point to understand need to be changed, not for the benefit of just one group in particular, but the benefit of all of us in our society. So I want to thank you all for listening. Thank my partner for being here with me. and a good night to all of you.
Thanks for listening. Good night. Thank you for listening to our show. If you have any questions, please do not hesitate to contact us at TAMG1, that is TAMG1, at UNLV. charles.nevada.edu or to contact Professor Charles Stanton at charles.stanton@unlv.edu.
See you next time.